Hello, I'm Keith and the Girls, Keith Malley.
I'm Chemda.
Welcome to My Opening Line. Of course, we talk to your favorite comedians, artists, find out why they started in their craft, and God, God, why did they keep going? Because usually it's horror stories, right?
The first one is usually horrible, and even when the first one goes well, the second one shows them reality.
Right.
Yeah, which is, this is a terrible, terrible way to go in your life.
Right. Well, today's guest was featured on Keith and the Girl, and everybody loved her immediately, as did we. Ladies and gentlemen, that's right. Host of the podcast Burning in Hell, featured on Betches, and featured on Summer House on Bravo, Hannah Berner.
Thank you for having me back, you guys. And thank you for the kind words. You didn't have to do that, Keith.
Oh.
He rips it up again with the papers. So I've never seen more papers that someone has.
You know, millennials are very confused by him.
They're
What are
the
what
only
are
papers? I like our paper straws. So I'm triggered by this.
Like hunters, I use all the parts.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I appreciate that.
He's like, trees are going to waste and I'm saving them.
Well, you'll hear the wrinkle sound and then I iron it out.
Nice.
Literally have a huge computer in front of you that you could easily put your notes on.
Let me tell you something about you comedians. Okay? That I don't know what kind of access you think you have to that computer in front of you, or especially that phone when you're on stage, but it's not seamless. You forget you have a password on it. You're like, you know what? I have a rebuttal. Hold on one second. That's my laundry list.
Where you bring comedians on to shit on them. I don't know who you think you are, but
I'm old school for a reason. Speaking of school, you in middle school, you went to a drama school, right?
I went to a school that specialized in arts, and drama was one of the things you could pick. There was like actual art. I mean, everything. I guess painting. I don't know what people fucking do.
She went to the school for, she's like, oh, you're part of the actual art side? I can't talk to you.
Right. I'm like, that's basic. There was like dance, chorus, that kind of stuff.
So middle school is like 10 to 13.
Yes.
And so picture a 10-year-old saying to their parents, I love drama. Like, I'd rather my kid said, I see dead people. I love drama. And I guess those are the years for
That's why I'm on a reality TV show. and it finds me every day and they my
go,
life.
And they go, great. 10 years old, you love drama. Uh-huh. Let's put you in this class.
Did you have to audition?
You did. Yeah. You had to get into these different talents.
Twinkle,
and they called it talent.
Twinkle little star. My name is Hannah Berner. I really love drama. Yeah. Let's do shots of Jello.
That was actually my chorus audition. I did. I think they made us sing Happy Birthday, which is the hardest song to sing. Right. It's very difficult. You start too high and you're fucked. But yeah, I did. But I was
the trials and tribulations of a 10-year-old trying out for school.
Yeah, these were my issues.
I remember being a waiter. I'd go, happy. Oh, fuck. Way too high. I'm like, let's start over. And I take the cake back. Yeah.
That's actually, that junior high is where they find all the waiters later in New York. Right. So we hear you've perfected Happy Birthday.
But like when they have you do a scene at 10 years old, where did they tell you to reach
for? This was a Brooklyn school in Park Slopes. Okay. And the guy was very into it, the acting coach, and he would also write his own plays that we would perform in front of like hundreds of parents. The play that he wrote was about the Irish potato famine.
Oh, what everyone's talking about.
Yes. Yeah. There was history involved. Lots of death. I played.
You wanted drama.
I know. I got the part of the Irish whore.
Oh.
The pregnant Irish whore. So I didn't even know what this was at the time, but I told my mom, like, I'm an Irish prostitute who's pregnant, and I end up dying on the boat, and then I come back as a ghost at the end.
Oh.
This was when I was 11 years old.
You had to stretch every muscle. I used to have sex for money.
My mom would have dragged me back to school and go, he's a potato. Do you hear me? He's a potato and that's it.
Then he's like, he looks like a pregnant woman. We had to give it to him.
Oh my God. And did they explain it to you? Like, well, a prostitute is.
I don't think he explained what prostitute was, but I think he meant like she was a lady of the night. Like they use a lot of those words to us. But it was very realistic.
Growing up, what we must have thought ladies at night did.
Right.
You were lady of the night. Anyway, you're pregnant now.
Yeah. I just thought like, yeah, I meant I had sex with people and I got pregnant because that's what happens when you have sex.
At night, as a lady.
I died as a lady.
Well, it's so
you have sex and die.
It's so easy to trick kids. So I, you know, to not answer questions. So I picture him being like, you know, a lady of the night. You're smart enough to understand that, right?
Okay, good. But it was like very progressive school.
What was your audition like to get into this?
I had to fuck him.
I had just a hand job. No, that's Hollywood. I don't remember. I feel like we all were trying out different parts and he just felt like I was meant for this one. He's like, she's the sluttiest in the class. No, I was like the sporty one. That's what happened is simultaneously at 10 years old, I also was doing tennis like 3 or 4 times a week while I was falling in love with acting. But tennis was where you'd get this like immediate instant gratification and you were like working out. My dad was so into tennis and acting was more was like what I really loved. Like I didn't get anxiety about it, but it wasn't giving me like these crazy highs. Like I'd do my or two performances, but I just got like addicted to tennis. And then by 12 I had to choose a like sport that because I was playing a lot of different sports and doing a lot of different things as a child does. And I had to choose tennis. And then I was like playing nationally and playing every day. And it became like, I actually left that middle school to go to Poly Prep because my coach was the coach, the tennis coach. And in eighth grade, I was playing varsity tennis there.
Wow.
So tennis kind of at 12 years old, my life took a turn.
And it ruined your career.
And it ruined my acting career. But I just like, then I just became a dumb jock for like the next 10 years. Everything was just tennis, tennis, tennis. But also when I was 11 years old or 10 years old, it was 9/11.
Oh.
So I feel like I was put all my anxiety and everything just like into tennis. I'm like, I don't like the world. The world is a scary place. I'm just going to focus on tennis. I'm going to win because it makes my parents happy. And I'm going to try to get a full scholarship.
So what?
College.
How are you even in entertainment now? What made you go back?
Great question.
Oh, thanks. write the timestamp down there. Thank you.
Very high quality question.
Thank you.
At the end of tennis at Wisconsin, I started to do some sports broadcasting. Like, I basically was like, hey, I know the athletes for my last semester. Can I like interview them and have fun? I always like to be on camera. I always liked attention. I always had a sense of humor, but I always felt like as a tennis player, I thought too much. Like I was always overthinking. I was aware of everything. And I felt like everyone else was more robotic than me and it made them like saner. And I was just like, I had too many thoughts. But now when I have tons of thoughts, I tweet like 10% of them and they're funny and good. And people are like, wow, you're so thoughtful. How do you think of that? And I'm like, 'cause I'm crazy.
Why do you think you needed the attention? Is it as simple as who doesn't want it?
I think I needed the attention 'cause I was trained as a young age that when you do something good, people like you more.
Okay.
And also I actually like love performing. I've always loved performing. I've always liked to create things. I like the like final product of me like doing a sports broadcasting video and editing it and then sharing it online and people enjoying it. Like I like creating things rather than like just spending days at work just nothing happening. Like I like the idea of like a podcast being released. Like I like putting things into the universe.
So what happened with the broadcasting?
So after I liked it, but then I immediately was like, get me out of this like small town. I want to go back to New York City where my family is.
Where were you?
I was in Madison, Wisconsin, which isn't that small, but like I basically was like, if I want to do sports broadcasting, I have to move to like Wichita or like some random place in like Missouri. I don't know any states besides New York, but
well, they didn't let you think.
They didn't. No, I was all I knew.
Now that you have Twitter, you can think.
Yeah,
I know about these Irish whores, but there's other states.
That's all I really learned was the potato famine and all the sex happening. Lots. It really just screwed me up on how my relationship with sex. We could talk about that later. But anyway, I also was like, I'm not going to make money doing video. Like, I immediately was like, I have to prove that I can be a businesswoman. And I went back home. My dad's in sales. I went into sales. I was cold calling.
The fuck?
At 22, I was cold calling.
What was that like? Twinkle. Twinkle.
I love that voice. Also, it could be very scary in a horror movie. Right. It depends the context.
It could also be
Christy Cello.
Oh my God, you're so right.
Just horny for Jesus.
I need to have her on my podcast. She needs. Does she have a podcast? Anyway, she needs one. And a little squeakier is Michelle Wolf. So then,
there's a whole range.
Yeah.
I'll just come on as them. Yeah. It's an easier booking time.
So, I was actually pretty good at sales because I'm decent at human interaction, and I would like make them laugh, and they joke that I just giggled the whole time, and I'd make a sale.
What were you selling?
I was selling digital marketing.
Okay.
Online digital marketing for small businesses. So I'd be like, oh, create content and like get ranked when people search like barbershop in Philly and like that kind of shit. It was so hard and difficult, but I was like making money.
Okay.
I was living at home and just making tons of money.
And did you consider, well, this
when
is,
I say tons, I don't mean tons, but for a 20-year-old, it was like a lot.
I can buy things.
I can buy something. Live
think about moving
exactly.
out.
Exactly.
But did you think it was creative because you had to navigate their personalities and kind of like by selling the things you were using?
I think I was still in my tennis mindset, which was like ultimate competitor. Okay. And I was like, I felt kind of lost after tennis. I felt like I failed kind of because I didn't want to go pro. That's all I wanted to do. But I was so burnt out, but I was like, what's the next thing that I could just it was
dominate
such, yeah, but it was such like a masochistic thing too. Like, you think I liked going into work 9 a.m and they're just like, get on the phones. I would like go to the bathroom to just be like, I need a break.
I do think that is the tell. Like, Keith and I have also had jobs where like I was a cashier, mm-hmm. and they wouldn't let us sit, even not even like a high chair, you know, where I'm up, I'm awake, I can count, and the computer's doing it for me. I took bathroom breaks. I never really had to go to the bathroom, but I just sat there.
I just That's how like, you know you're fucking done with your job, when you just start spending hours in the bathroom.
Yeah, and I was like, well, I need to stay here in the bathroom short enough that they think it's a pee, because I don't want anyone thinking I'm pooping.
Yeah, you don't need to start that like rumor.
Like, how many times are you pooping a day?
Yeah, you're like, she definitely suffers from a lactose intolerance.
Meanwhile, no one's clocking your bathroom time.
No, except, so sales, I was like, I wanted to do something more creative. So then I went into selling digital into being a digital marketer for a t-shirt company. So I did like social, because I'm also a millennial. I know social media, and I'd been selling it so much that I learned a lot about it. Mm. This company was 4 people. So when I go to the bathroom, everyone was hyper aware. So that really fucked with my whole plan.
That would make me constipated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or yeah, it was just bad. So I did that for a year and a half and I hated it. And I literally was sitting in a hotel in Las Vegas selling t-shirts at like one of those trade shows.
And
it was a nightmare. It was a nightmare. Yeah, just fake giggling at everyone, crying underneath. And you have to stand the whole time, and I hate standing. Like, standing's my least favorite thing in the world. And
are they hitting on you at these conventions?
It was all just like ladies from the Midwest and the South shopping for their boutiques.
Mm. And blessing your heart.
So they were hitting on me, yes. Oh, bless your heart. Are you from New York? It's scary over there. So then I was sitting in the hotel room putting in orders, just like feeling like empty and like having no purpose. And which I thought was like normal. But then I pulled up an old video from University of Wisconsin of me doing reporting, and I just thought, yeah, fuck this, I need to do video. I don't know what capacity, but I need to get back into video. And I quit my job and did an unpaid internship at scout.com, which is like a sports college online
in New York
thing in New York. Mm-hmm. Literally, I think I was 25 and I was like, I don't care if I get paid, I just need to like get my editing skills back. They didn't let me edit at all. I was just like doing data for them. They were like, can you choose like the top 10 teams that are expected to get to the playoff, like that kind of shit. Mm. But at least on my resume, I was like, I was an intern, but I was doing something back. Like, I just had to start from somewhere.
Mm-hmm. When you would start making videos and put them online, I assume you have to read the comments that you created the videos.
Oh, for like for Betches?
Whenever you go to the next stage, wherever it is, you're looking at these comments. How cruel did they get? And did you have to, like, I'm the producer, but I can't be reading this.
So my thing is I submitted a video for Betches, and they ended up hiring me to start freelancing.
Wait, what was the video like?
The video was, they were like, make a Betchy video. They didn't even know what their brand is.
I think we have attitude.
I was just like, whatever. But I just kind of was like, okay, what do I think is funny? I said, how a betch goes to the gym. And I like filmed it on my phone, but it was basically like, why do I have so many black yoga pants when I don't even do yoga? Pick one. tell everyone I'm going to the gym, get to the gym and just stretch and send selfies. And then it was like running and sending videos to your friends. It's like, you're gross and you're making faces. Like, I hate this. Then you're wondering why the trainer, how trainer isn't looking at you. And then you realize you look like whatever. I just like did like every single thought I have as a girl in the gym. And then they asked me to come in for an interview and I brought like tons of ideas. And they were like, you have no experience. And I'm like, but I have all these ideas. And they're like, we'll pay you $300 a week. Just like come in and make some videos. We'll see. And I was like, this is my big break. And it turns out like it was. Mm.
Did you get bathroom privileges immediately?
I barely had like, I was literally, it was so funny. I was the seventh hire there. Kind of hire. They were to start, they didn't know what they were doing. I started with graphic videos where I call it Betches Bootcamp. I was writing 80 memes a week.
Holy shit.
So memes are like you find GIFs or images and you, or like tweets. So that's like how now like I love tweeting. It's because I was like writing so much stuff at Betches. And then I was creating these graphic videos because they didn't want to put my face in anything. They
that's
were like
not offensive.
Yeah. They I didn't. Now that I say that out loud, I'm like, what the fuck? But they were like weird.
At some point, they sent me to salon, and then shortly after, I was in front of the camera, which felt like something. I just put something together. Hold on.
They wanted to be me behind that distorted glass. Yeah. That was their image.
My voice was this, but I'm not. But I think they were never in front of the camera, and they were weird. Like, I have 6 million followers, and I guess they were weird about like giving someone any kind of notoriety. This is important for later. Remember that. Okay. So I was doing these graphic videos like, you know, 10 guys who are ugly hot or like these, the most embarrassing things said on reality TV, like that kind of compilation.
12
type
things
shit.
That are super hot about Santa Claus.
Exactly. And like, they were fun, but they weren't blowing up on Instagram. Like, it's not like that original or that creative. So finally they were like, can you make like a meme video, but like an actual like sketch and make it a meme on top and like act it out? And I was like, yeah, I think so. But like, I didn't have a videographer. I didn't have, it was just me.
Isn't that funny though, too? Just that word became something, a meme.
A meme.
Like, it was just an idea that spread, but now it means I put font on top of something.
I have a font on top of something. That's the doctor term. I have a font.
I can make a video. Yeah, but make it a meme. What's different? Write words on the video. And keep the words there the whole time. Now it's a meme.
It is very different, Keith. Right. It is very different.
And meme it.
And right. Meme it. It's an action. I need this to be memed. Right. So they go, who's going to meme this? Someone meme this. All we did. It was like crazy. But we'd start trends of memes. Like, it was crazy. Or like whenever a new award show would happen, we'd be have to like meme all the outfits. It was like meme factory. I was in
meme the outfits.
Meme factory.
We used to call it captioning.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, exactly.
I want you to meme Schindler's List Mondays. All right, Jurassic Park.
Honestly, you're hired.
You're such a batch.
Right.
Batch.
Oh,
he's red. So I actually, there was a guy on my flag football team who was a wedding videographer, and I was like, hey, do you have a camera? Can you just like shoot a 1 minute video for me? And he was like, sure. And I asked them, like, can I pay this guy $50? And they were like, okay. And then the video I did, the first ever video I did, actually went viral that was filmed. And it was when Bae FaceTimes you. So Bae is like what people were saying before anyone else. It means like that's what
I didn't know
it
stood for something.
Before anyone else.
Is that true, or did they make up?
It's true.
She's looking back at the millennials.
I'm looking at the millennials. I'm like, come on, guys, support me. That's what it means. So when Bae FaceTimes you. So it was me on a bed, and I look like a mess. I'll send this to you guys if you want to post it or whatever. I look like a mess. And I'm in my pajamas, reading a magazine, and I get a call. And we put, like, the name was, like, Bae. And I have my headphones in. And I answer, and I go, hold on one sec. I have to find my headphones. And then I run to the bathroom, and we do, like, cuts of me, like, putting on mascara, putting on makeup, curling my hair, putting on lipstick. Then I run back into the room and get a ring light, and I, like, pull the ring light. And then I just look at the phone, and I go, hey, what's up? It hit a million views. Granted, we have 6 million followers, but, like, that meant, like, it did well.
Yeah.
And the girls were like, can you do this 3 times a week?
Can you make something go viral three times a week?
And I looked at them and I was just like, yes. Like, this was like what I knew that, like, I just, this was where I need to be. And I just felt so fortunate to be in the situation. It's funny because fast forward like 2 years, I was like, I can't believe I did that three times a week. But I just started to, like, every idea I had, and it was such a small team. So you're able to do it so fast. You just write it. And we'd film it, and then we'd send it to the girls, and then we'd pray for them to like it. And there were three of them. So sometimes, like, one would hate it, two would like it. They'd fight over it for a week. Fuck. So that kind of sucked. But
are you still at the same pay at that point?
Yes. Then they offered me, they finally offered me something after like a couple of those videos. Wasn't great. I was like, I did go to college, you know that. And then, but they but got they me on the payroll. Start
of their own situation, so they might not have had the budget.
They were like 4 years in. They're doing well, but I think, like, because of my lack of experience, they were keeping me at a certain point. And like they're not like known for, you know, I don't know. It was the first business they ran. I think in the future, if it's someone's in video and doing that stuff, you should invest more in them, because video is like actually really difficult. But I didn't know, and I was just like, cool.
And it's too late now to say my pay should have been.
Yeah.
And then ask for the difference.
Exactly. I thought of it. No, it's okay.
I'm not mad. We were all new. But you owe me.
I just send them a bill. You know what you did.
Right. And now, do people start recognizing your face because of these videos?
So I was very aware in the beginning. I was like, this isn't an ego trip. I'm not in this to get famous. It was literally because I wanted to create stuff. So when I thought I'd be really good for a video, I'd put myself in. But then I also started to hire, like, local comedian friends that I knew, actually, like, because I had, like, dated a comedian and I knew people, and I was like, oh my god, I could get these people, like, bigger opportunities. And I, like, that's how I met, like, Mary Beth Barone and Ali Colbert, and, like, there's just a bunch of different Elise Morales. There's tons that I started to work with, and it was really fun to create this, like, little community, and they were great in the videos. But my videos, when I was in them, they started to do really well. And then I started to do a Insta story series, which means, like, they put it on their Insta stories, where I did Hannah's horoscopes, but I would make them really realistic. So I'd be, or like Betchy. So I'd look at the real horoscope. It'll say, like, you need to not, don't do something too risky because it could go badly, would be like what it really says. And then I'd be like, the moon is in Uranus, so you, like, definitely shouldn't do anal. It's going to go badly. You're going to regret it, and you'll be leaking for 4 days. And, like, people thought it was so funny. So I started doing that, and I just felt, like, so fulfilled. I was, like, doing Insta stories, and I started to get, like, I was, like, private on Instagram, but then people started to kind of follow. Mm. And when you asked about comments, I was in this niche of, like, Betch's world, which is just a bunch of girls who want to laugh. And, like, it's mostly girls being like, this is the funniest thing I've ever seen. I'm dying. I'm dead. I'm crying. And they're tagging all their friends. And I started to get this confidence of, like, oh, my God, like, people like my writing. And then I just kept writing and writing, and things were going well.
Okay. Did anybody get jealous when you mentioned them in notoriety? Did people start getting?
I got fired from the job, ultimately.
Oh, why?
One second, I want to tell everybody about Quip, Q-U-I-P. It's the toothbrush I use. Hemda uses it. It's electric, but not big and bulky like a regular electric one when you think electric, right?
Yeah, not as expensive either. It was so affordable that I have one at home, and I also have one when I stay at my brother's family's place. It's an electric toothbrush that doesn't take up the amount of room that the regular one does, and it's just, it actually is the size of a regular toothbrush. So here's what I like actually the most in it. Mm-hmm. I know that I'm brushing my teeth for 2 minutes because it indicates it every 30 seconds. So I know to do 30 seconds on the top right, 30 seconds on the top left, bottom right, bottom left, obviously. And then when it's done, it's this sense of satisfaction. Actually, I told my friend Aldo about it, and he recently texted me. He said, dude, I came in for my 6-month dental cleaning. It took less than 15 minutes on the actual cleaning. That goddamn Quip really works.
That's right. It's great. You're going to love it too. Over 1 million happy, healthy mouths do. Quip starts at just $25.
That's the craziest part.
Yeah. And if you go to getquip.com/MOL for my opening line, /MOL, right now, you can get your first refill pack for free. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/MOL.
Do it.
I got fired from the job, ultimately.
Oh, why?
So, at some point...
You were too betchy?
At some point, things were going very well, and I got a call for Summer House.
Okay.
And I think it's because I also was doing interviews there, and I'd interviewed the Summer House cast. We'd like do stuff with Bravo sometimes, and my name was thrown around in casting. And I got a call, and I told the girls, I said, I want to do this reality show.
But would that take you away? I thought it was
on the weekends only. And yeah. They were like, you can do it as long as it doesn't affect your job during the week.
Okay.
Or we'll fire you. And I was like, okay. Like, and I worked really hard that whole summer. I worked 5 days a week. Then I go and film for 2 days. I was working 7 days a week. And by working, I mean, I was partying and fighting on the weekend, but still it's exhausting.
But they need that on camera. So
yes, they need that content. And then I decided to launch my podcast. Now,
before you, because Summer House is a reality show. It's mm-hmm. on Bravo.
The next season's airing February 5th, actually. There's a new trailer up.
Oh, congratulations.
If you guys want to look. Yeah. Eventually. Yeah.
But were you, when they asked you to be on Summer House, were you thinking, maybe this is a risk because it's a reality show?
It was a huge risk.
Because you get put into this sort of like reality show kind of bimbo sort of situation, like, mm-hmm. oh, you're just coasting your job, you're getting famous over nothing, like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Were you worried about that?
So I am not one to ever, some people were like, I want to do reality TV. Like I never wanted to be on The Bachelor. That was never in my head ever. But this show was unique in that they follow your career during the week. And then you like go to the Hamptons on the weekend. And I'm like a New Yorker who'd go to Long Island on the weekend. So it fit kind of my natural life. And then I was like, if I can create something during the week that they follow, like a podcast, that would really help my career. And like they'd see me as like, oh, Hannah does comedy, or at the time I was a video producer.
And I thought this is a really big deal. And I think you're super smart. And it's one of those decisions that does make you a businesswoman.
You got
Summer House and was like, if they're going to follow me, they're going to follow a dream that I'm creating. You started the podcast to give them something to follow and to give you something to come back to and lean on so that Summer House would feed it, which is a genius move.
Well, I actually was on, the phone with a lawyer who was the lawyer for Real Housewives of New Jersey, like Teresa Giudice's lawyer. Cause I was like, I want the meanest lawyer. And I'm talking to him. And this guy was
nobody that represented the housewives that are in jail. That's important too. I don't want that lawyer.
I'm like, you never know what's going to happen. I'm always in drama. So, but he was basically like, they give you the show and they give you nothing else. And I think that's why you see a wide range of reality TV people. Like they don't set you up with like a marketing person or like a career guide or like a financial advisor. No, it's just like, here's the show. You figure it out.
And do you get a stipend? Do you get a little bit of money for just being on camera?
They give you a stipend like when we go out to dinner.
Oh, okay. So you are filming for the, to get on camera, to get a little bit of...
Yeah, and they pay you per episode.
Okay.
On Summer House.
But when you eat, they only pay for the alcohol.
They pay for dinner and two alcoholic beverages.
Interesting.
I think that's a legal thing. But then two alcoholic beverages in, I'm like, okay, that's my card, espresso martinis for everyone. And then it's like $800 in the Hamptons. And I'm like, I need to pay rent.
And do you only get paid if you make it into the episode? And
Yeah.
Okay.
But most of us, like, it's... Unless you're like kind of in trouble and don't get invited to the house that weekend, you'll be in the episode.
Okay.
But it was eight of us that got chosen. And I remember thinking, I can't control, this isn't like creative for me. I can't control what people are going to see on TV. But and he said something strong to me. He goes, whatever you
do.
Yeah. He goes, make sure that people either love you or hate you. Don't ever have people be like, eh. Because he's like, because the people who love you are going to be your cult. You can then like monetize them. You can then like expand with them. And like right now I have merch. I have a podcast. I have a Patreon. I do live shows. And there's like a group of people who found me from different things. But like we're on a journey together.
But did you make the decision to be liked? Or did you just say, I'm going to be myself and hopefully... They either like me or hate me.
I think first season, I wanted to be myself, but I also was political. Like, I wanted to be liked. I wasn't like, I don't have, like.
How can you be liked on a reality show? Like, what is that?
The thing about being, it's more, this is the thing with reality, is it's just about owning your shit.
Okay.
Like, the only way to get not liked is if, like, you're not being self-aware. Because reality TV is about making mistakes and then solving it. Like, you mess so up.
If in the confessional you were like, yeah, I was shitty.
Yeah.
Here's how I'm going to make up
just
for it.
Just own your shit. Okay. And that's like, it's helped me so much in life too. Even communication, like you fight with someone, the next thing is, okay, you guys have to talk. Mm. Like that's now like a friend and I will have something. I'm like, okay, we have to get on the phone. And they're like, what? And I'm like, we have to talk this out.
But you have to do a confessional.
Yeah. Somebody goes on the computer. I like Hannah. She knows the proper amount to be in the hot tub. She doesn't overstay her welcome.
That's what I'm going to do every time me and Keith get into a fight. We're going to be like, let's get our producer, Andrea.
exactly.
She's got to do some confessionals.
And I was like, I wanted to be like, but I remember in the very early on interviews before I got on the show, I said, look, I'm not your party girl and I'm never going to be that. I'm not going to be like, I can't be your like, I'm not your slutty girl. I said, if you want a girl who can show that like girls can be entrepreneurs or girls can be funny and girls can be strong, girls can be athletic, I can be that girl for you.
Did their heads explode?
And they were like, what? Women can be athletic? And they basically were like looking for strong women at the time.
They go, okay, oh, so you're the funny one. Okay.
Yeah. So, I wasn't the hot. I was like, I'm not the hot one.
You're the brunette. I get it. Okay, cool.
But I also remember this lawyer telling me like, which person are you going to be? Like, there's going to be the hot mess. There's going to be the sexy one. There's going to be like the relatable one. There's going to be, you know, the douchebag guy, the hot guy, whatever. And I was like, I want to be the one that's saying what everyone's thinking. But you can't like force that. And I think
she just walks around like, you're thinking about sex right now. I can see it. You're grinding a little bit in your seat. I can tell.
Yeah, I'm not the listening one. I tell you.
Oh yeah. I'm not never the listening one. So, and I was scared that it could be really bad for my career potentially. I was afraid I was going to get like typecast as like the reality girl, but in this day and age, like Theo Vaughn talks about, he was on Real World and it took him like 10 years to be like, I'm not just a reality TV star, I'm a comedian. But back in his day, the media was controlled by just like the big conglomerates. Now, if you're like, what's going on with Hannah Burner? You go on my profile, you see all the stuff I'm doing. You're like, oh, she's doing podcasting. Oh, she's doing stand-up. Oh, she's, you know, whatever. So I get to shape my identity to people. And that's been really empowering. And also shows like you create yourself out of nothing. Like all this stuff was not there. Like you can make things for yourself that other people don't even like envision. They might want to typecast you, but you can show them that you're not.
When you look at Betches letting you go, was it a jealousy thing or is it you weren't able to keep content going?
Oh, Keith, bring out great the question. Catty question.
Great question. Yes. So just by dates, the whole summer that I was shooting, I like worked really hard to make sure it didn't affect anything. And then we stopped shooting and then stuff was back to normal. And then a month before the show aired, they kind of pulled me aside and they were like, you can't miss any time because of like press or something. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure press day is like one day. Right. And you guys give me unlimited vacation days and I would probably take that. And I never take vacation days. And like, we kind of got into it.
Do you say, hey, this show is good for all of us?
Well, I mean, I even pitched that the people wanted to shoot, Summer House wanted to shoot at Betches.
No. Oh.
And Betches said no.
Weird.
Huh.
Because they were just like, we don't want to be part of like you trying to get famous.
Okay. Well, they had a different brand idea, I guess.
Exactly. And they wanted to be controlled. They're very sensitive about their brand, which is understandable. But like, I thought that this could be helpful for everyone. Bravo's very on brand for them. They love all the Bravo shows. So
but I can see their hesitation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, but there was like a, I wasn't feeling like they were like happy. I mean, they weren't happy that I was on the show. And then there was like some weird stuff going on with other people. Like I love most of the people that work there, but there were like two people that were like dicks and like making up stuff about me and like trying to get me in trouble or like tattletaling, like, oh, that I came in late and lied about a doctor's appointment that like wasn't even true. I just was late. Or like that I wanted to be tagged in something because I wanted more followers when I'm like the things like that. And just like, it was just bad vibes happening. And like, we got in a huge fight.
Damn.
And I basically was like, job is like my dream job. I'm so passionate about it. You guys know that. I started the video team when there was as the seventh hire, expanded the team to four people and was basically doing everything. And it was like my voice and everything. And I got fired. And then I just felt like my character was attacked.
Did you? Oh my God. Because I'm still thinking of Twinkle Twinkle Little Star person in front of you. Like, this is my dream come true. And they're like, yeah, get out.
But what I realized is I wouldn't have quit if they didn't fire me. And then everything started. They also, I don't think they loved that I started a podcast, but like they didn't like pay us to do podcasts, and like mental health wasn't like their thing, and I wanted to be called Burning in Hell, which is like so under my name and my brand. So like I kind of hit
a great name for your podcast.
Oh, thank you. But I hit a glass ceiling with them, and I think they knew it and I didn't, and I was like, I love this place, this is where I want to be, and they were dealing with their own stuff and some, and basically they fired me. And then I realized that I can now like do my podcast, I can now like just start creating videos on my own. And then like Summer House aired immediately, and like things changed for me. And then I started having like getting money from Instagram that was sufficing, and from like the salary that I wasn't getting anymore.
So it sounds like you owe somebody a thank you.
So, and ultimately, I mean, when I left them, I looked them in the eye and I said, thank you for giving me this opportunity and believing in me. And like, I think we're good now. There was just like moment, like it all went to a head, because like I think I was the first person in the company who had, they saw like grow kind of because of them, and they didn't know how to handle it.
Well, so while this is happening, because it seemed like everything, like you worked really hard, it didn't all happen at the same time, but it all sort of started piling at some point. Were you thinking, well, this is a reality show and a podcast and Instagram, all things that sort of seem temporary, a passing fad possibly? Were you nervous that that's happening, or were you just kind of head down and continuing?
I feel like I was kind of head down because I just wanted to be happy. Like I literally just every day my thing is like, do I feel depressed or not? And like if I wake up and I feel happy, and I feel happy when I'm creating. So I wake up and I'm like, holy shit, I get to just like make what I want, and that's creating is my joy. So I was just enjoying that I like didn't have a 9-to-5, and that I was, the podcast was like so, it's so fun for me. So I've just been happy, and I've been able to afford a studio with my cat in Long Island City, and like, so I'm like in a good place right now. And
oh, that's right, we're neighbors.
Yeah, we're neighbors. Yes. We have great taste in neighborhoods. And
yes, we both decided on a studio.
We're so happy. I'm like, I barely have a closet, but it is gorgeous. Yep. And my cat loves it. And I feel like I was able to, could then stand up came. And I felt like I was.
So this is the interesting. I mean, this is all very interesting. Yeah. But your first, like we interview a lot of stand-up people, but we also interview people who are more in theater or in front of the camera, behind the camera, whatever. Your first time doing stand-up was just 6 months ago.
It was in April.
And it was highly unusual, because usually people's first time is at an open mic that is just, it feels like a basement of a church or something.
Yeah. And I get a lot of hate. Like from other comics who are like, you gotta go in the basement, bomb. And I totally understand that, and I totally respect that. But I was in a situation where like my tweets had been going viral. I'd been writing a lot of just tweets, which are like whether buttons of jokes or concepts for jokes.
They're like memes with more letters.
Exactly. Right. You get it. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Well, you were basically, it sounds like you were using that as an open mic.
Exactly.
To test your jokes.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I was getting positive feedback on certain ones, and I've always loved to write. So I loved writing and I loved performing, which are two very important things for stand up. And Carolyn Gittimer from Caroline's DM'd me and was like, I love Summer House, I love your podcast, have you ever done a live podcast? And I was like, no, that sounds fun. And she was like, let's do it. And she pushed me, she was like, fucking do it. And I said, sure. And then my friend is like, you should open with 10 minutes of stand-up. Why not? And I was just like...
And that's pretty rough. People usually start with like 2 minutes.
Bombing. I didn't know these things, because also like...
That's great.
Of the comics I knew, they all like have hour specials, and I'm like... And she like kind of knows about comedy, but not really. And she just like, do 10 minutes.
You're like, I'd rather not record the special tonight, though. Can I just fuck around for a little
bit? She's like, do a 2-hour special. And my first thing, I was like, do people want to hear me talk at them for 10 minutes straight? It's like leaving an obnoxious voicemail.
Right.
Like after 1 minute, you're like, why am I still talking by? Like that's like how I thought stand-up was. People always were like, you should do it. But I also like my ex was in it, and I was afraid of doing it. What he did, which is so stupid, but that was like my like little circle.
Was in stand-up.
Yeah, in stand-up. But I basically was like, looked at all my tweets, and I found like my favorite ones, like making fun of of dating, and then my favorite ones, making fun of napping. There were some cat jokes and horoscope jokes in there, and it all kind of blended together. And then I practiced it a couple times.
On stage or in your house?
In my house. When I say a couple times, I was doing it like 5 times a day to my cat with a comb, and like just doing it over and over
again. The cat ever coincidentally walk away and you're like, fuck.
She didn't laugh once. So I bonded for my cat a lot.
They can smell death.
And then I murder it sometimes. Anyway, just kidding. I don't like dead cat jokes.
What was right, that's not you. That's not
that is
brand.
Not my brand. I do not support killing cats.
What was literally your opening line when you did stand up? What's the first thing you said?
So Caroline's 250 people sold out show. It was one of those nerves where you're like in shock. Like you don't even know what to be nervous about. Like I've never experienced this before. And I go out. I think my first line, I'm going to fuck it up probably. But I was like, what's up, guys? Welcome to Times Square, the hellhole of the world. You guys didn't know it, but hell is just full of a bunch of grown men dressed in Elmo costumes. Mm. And people like got a giggle. And then
people said okay.
I remember
Elmo.
I remember the first giggle.
Elmo, what?
And also these people all like were just excited to see me. They're my friends, and I got a giggle. And then I was like, I'm from Brooklyn, New York. And the way you can tell that someone's always tell that someone's from Brooklyn, New York is they will tell you they're from Brooklyn within the first 2 minutes of meeting them. And it's like a local crowd, so I got a little laughter. And then my heart rate just slowed down, and I felt like I was at coffee with a friend, and I had worked so hard to memorize it that I kind of blacked out, but it went like very smoothly. The people were laughing, and then I brought my guest on stage, and it was really fun.
Have you seen the tape after? Because that's what the Joker thought.
Did he like cry on the mic or something? So then I started crying. People were laughing at me. It was working.
I got a movie deal.
I got a movie deal.
I had to wear a little more makeup than I'm used to.
But then, yeah, I remember afterwards just being like, I dealt with tennis where I dealt with a lot of performance anxiety where I'd get on the court and my heart rate just wouldn't stop and I'd like overthink it and I couldn't perform. So the fact that I did stand up and I didn't completely, and I don't mean to use the word bomb, that I didn't like just like freeze up or like get the yips or like think myself out of it, I was very happy.
Did you say get the yips?
The yips is like, it's a sports term as in like you like a baseball player just forgetting how to throw the ball. Like you just like psych yourself out. Right. So I was like, I didn't psych myself out. I performed it. I did it. And I wasn't even listening to the laughs. I was like, I did it. I went out there and I talked. It's so insane.
That's awesome. Is the yips? I think the yips is what happened when I tried out for LaGuardia College, LaGuardia High School. I actually can sing but I was so young and so inexperienced. During part of the audition, they were playing a piano and they said, just copy this note. And they'd go ding. And all you have to go is, right? And so they'd go ding. And I'm like, didn't even hear it. I didn't even hear it.
Because you're blacked out.
And yet I sang a note.
Like, who knows what that note was?
No idea.
Noise no one's ever heard before in the history of singing.
Yeah. So I was like, ding.
She made the old school internet sound.
I remember that. I'm not that.
I turned into a dolphin, just hoping for the best.
Oh my God, LaGuardia High School. That was right by my high school, Beacon. Beacon. But yeah, so I've gone through comedy in a very weird way. It's from people like unorthodox situations of just technology of being like, okay, she has a podcast. Okay, she's on TV. And I started just with 10 minutes and it was fun.
Isn't it funny how comics are angry or jealous of your start?
I'm getting my backlash, but I also like, I respect it. I do. But also I'm like, you're not talking to someone who doesn't know what it means to be great at something. Like I did tennis for 12 years. I know what it means to get good at something.
Right. There's also,
and I'm not walking around like, hey, I'm the fucking queen of stand up. Like, anyway, yeah.
I feel like there's ways into everything and to shut down a new way to get something because you didn't go that route is a big mistake. And I think it lacks progress.
You're also going to feel the failure or them not digging you, the audience. If that's what's happening, you know?
Yeah. Also, it doesn't mean that they're going to like me just because I'm on a TV show. Like, yeah, some crowds might be easier on me if they know me and they like me, but still.
But you still develop that crowd. And I think that's right. The point. Maybe I'm just defending you so much because I'm used to defending Keith with this, because when I first met him, he was doing stand-up once a week. This is how we met, uh-huh. at this crazy open mic that was just amazing on the Lower East Side. Cool. It was like people smoking weed indoors. Surf Reality. Uh-huh. You know, we saw people like do very avant-garde things, and then also saw like really up-and-coming comedians that ended up being like super famous. So lots of diversity. I was singing. Keith was doing stand-up only once a week at this space. Then after a year of that, we had gotten together, and he was turning 30. And I was like, why don't you just do an hour? Like your friend. And I was like, why don't you put all this shit together? You had a lot of thoughts. Uh-huh. And since you're going to do an hour, it's going to be your birthday. So to me, we didn't have the podcast yet. To me, it was like, well, everyone has to come out. It's your birthday, right? I'll produce it. I'll get a venue. And at the time, people's venues weren't online. This was 15 years ago, over 15 years ago.
You had to talk to people and call them?
I walked around the West Village, went into spaces and said, how do you work this place? Like, can I rent it? Can I borrow it for a night?
She's a real ass bitch.
No kidding.
and I just eventually either got someone on the phone or got, you know, someone to say yes. And I was like, we must know three people with cameras. At the time, cameras were not on phones. Cameras weren't in people's hands all the time. We borrowed three different cameras, put them oddly on people's tables. It was so weird. And it wasn't the best video ever, but we got it on. Then we printed our own DVDs from a computer. We printed our own.
And then you went on Times Square and tried to give it to people.
Right. And I go, you broke my CD.
We hired Elmo to. Right.
Yeah. Elmo's promoting on the corner.
Less ass grabbing and more CD selling.
And then since he did it one time, he absolutely fell in love with it. And since then, he's been doing it once a year only. One full hour of basically his...
Of new material?
Of new material.
That's what you do?
Well, you can't do old material if you do it once a year, right?
People forgot it by then, right. So you could do it again. They're like, oh, I think I remember. No, I don't remember that joke.
I'd rather you didn't collect the albums, but here's a new album.
Wait, I love that so much.
And then just like you, we started the podcast like a year after his first time. So that's where the audience started coming in. But also the comics that would come in to Keith and the girl would be like, that's not stand up. You're just talking to your own audience. And we're like, okay, but when there's an audience in Alabama and you're doing jokes against Trump, let's say, you're like, that's a bad audience, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, then get your own audience. I don't know what to tell you. Like, it's
hard because then once you, like Chappelle, is he not always performing in front of his audience? Is he not a stand-up? No, people love him.
That's true. It's very hard
and
for him to
I'm telling you, like, there's so many, people that aren't good at stand-up who have audiences that bomb.
Yeah, well, we were on Mark Maron's show, and he says, oh, who do you sell your CDs to, your fans? And he has, like, a little sarcastic attitude. Yeah, yeah. I'm like, yeah, who do you sell yours to, Mark?
Yeah.
Your enemies?
Also, they weren't originally fans.
Yeah.
Right.
But with that, I also, like, I want to get good at this craft, but I also think in creativity, there's no right way about it. But stand-up's interesting because, like, in singing, there'll be a singer come out of nowhere, a young 17-year-old, and have a hit song. And she's not bombing in, you know, restaurants. She just immediately is doing MSG and stuff. And, like, people don't say, like, well, she needs to fuck up her song in restaurants for a while. So it's this weird, like, thing where... So now I'm trying to book, like, a lot of smaller shows because I want that, like, exercise and I want to hone that skill. But I can't help if, because I have an audience, I need to make money. And if, like... a club wants to meet a headline, I'm going to do it.
I would think, you know, you would think these comics, maybe they're mad because they think we don't respect the craft and understand you have to get better.
I respect the craft so much.
But that's not what they're upset about, I think. They're upset that they didn't literally have a show where somebody dumped diarrhea on their head, that they had to perform in a bathroom somewhere and somebody kicked them in the balls. They want you to have your car break down in Nebraska.
Yeah.
Then if you went through those.
Like, I fucking respect that so much.
But how about stand-ups who start a podcast? Are you respecting me?
Yeah.
Okay, that's I was talking to my friend Taylor Strecker, who's doing, like, she's kind of starting stand-up, and she did SiriusXM for 15 years, and she's saying these comics are like, you can't just be like, you're not a stand-up, and she's like, well, they just come into my space and start a podcast.
Yeah.
Like, she's not telling Whitney Cummings that she can't do radio. She's mm-hmm. going to be fucking great at it.
Right. Did Whitney go to school for communication?
Well, yeah. Was she in Kansas City doing shows at 7 a.m.? Right. So there's just different ways of going about it. But I also think like funny is funny. And we don't decide what's funny. The audience decides what's funny. And I fell in love with it. I've been falling in love with it. I did my first like mini tour, which is also funny. Now I know you'd appreciate this. Somehow, so the next show I did was Gotham. I did 20 minutes. And then the next show I did was Philly Punchline. And I did about 30 minutes, but it turned into 40 because I'm just like crowd work, whatever. And my friend was like, you just did 40. And I've no, it's fun. And I've
I got the you're doing great light.
I got multiple times. It kept going. They kept blinking. Uh-huh. But I felt like there's probably so much fat in it, but I'm just proud of myself that I'm at a bare minimum with myself. I'm just proud that I'm like putting myself out there and doing it and getting better. And
I think it's a big deal because I have been podcasting for 15 years with Keith, but for me to get on stage by myself is so much harder than when I don't have that partner, because that's what I'm used to. It's very different. There are no real gimmies. There's like a couple of like, you know, soft falls, but I give you a lot of credit, both of you. I can't get on stage and do 30 minutes by myself. I don't want to because I understand how hard it is, no matter if you're in front of an audience that cares about you or not.
And it's not even like, it's definitely hard, but there's a type of person for it. Like there's some people that be like, I would hate to, you know, have to banter with someone all day. That sounds like a nightmare.
Right. And I want to do it for 24 hours.
Exactly.
Coming January 25th.
But I'd also argue that tennis and stand-up are very similar, and tennis has prepared me. If you think about it, you're alone out there. There's no coaches. You're out there and you have to figure it out. There's the variable. You're not just performing. There's a variable of like the girl and how she's playing, where with stand-up, there's a variable of the crowd and like how you're feeling and you remembering the jokes and the crowd work and someone heckling you.
And there's a lot of grunting.
A lot of grunting, weird noises. Oh, that'd be so good
if your first special was on ESPN.
Oh my God, ESPNW. It's
for women?
Yeah, just for millennial women. And they make it a meme. They put words on top. And fans are like, this is not stand-up. Okay, I don't give a fuck what you call it. I just want to pay rent. I love saying that, though. It's true. It's like, call me a banana. I don't care what you call me. But I'm figuring my shit out and I'm doing my thing.
That's what Keith says. What does your girlfriend call your yearly stand-up? Your year in review. She goes, it's not stand-up. It's year in review. And people are waiting for Keith to combat upset. Them. And he's like, all right, it's my year in review.
Yeah.
Are you coming?
I just want to know, are you paying the bills? And also, are you paying my bills? I don't think you are, so you call whatever you want.
But comedians will say, like, you're not a comic. And I go, okay. And they're like, well, I didn't think it was supposed to end there. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, but literally, I don't care if people call me. I really don't care what people call me.
I'm still going to, like, kind of hold the microphone the way you guys do. Yeah. And kind of say things in a certain pattern. I'm going to do that.
Seriously, I don't give a fuck what you call me.
But I do need a name when people ask. So if you come up with one.
You know what you should call it? Solo podcast.
Right. Or solo podcast.
I do think technology is changing. And people, I heard on some podcast, like, oh, everyone's doing comedy now, reality TV people, whatever. And it's like, yeah, everyone does comedy, but not everyone's funny. And that's...
Everyone does podcasts, too.
Everyone does podcasts. They're like, everyone has a Netflix special.
Everyone has Twitter.
Everyone has Twitter.
Yeah.
People are doing it, but like the cream rises to the top.
Everybody has access to the internet that's listening right now. So you're all podcasters too. Congrats, everybody.
Yeah. Yes. But, and also I'd like to say to these people who I totally respect how stand up has been in the past, but these are same people who are like, I would never ever put my jokes online. Now those same people are putting clips of their jokes online, putting words above it, making it a meme, getting hundreds of thousands of views because they're being smart. You did that in front of 50 people at night, but then get the content, show like hundreds of thousands of people on Instagram, and then make them want to see you and buy tickets.
Yeah, and so that we care, right? That moment when on top.
Yes, exactly. So it clicks in your head.
It is a moment when.
It is. Your face when. My face when. It's just me spazzing out. But it just shows how like they are slowly evolving too. Yeah. And there are like YouTubers that are doing comedy now, and I do think that some people are good at it and some people are bad. And we're all just figuring it out in different ways.
And don't worry, those commenters, they'll let you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, they'll let you know.
She's not going to know.
Yeah.
I wonder how that one went. No. Anybody can type.
I also almost feel like lying too. Like, yeah, I've bombed in a lot of basements and then seeing if they treat me differently.
Yeah.
Like knowing my stand up. But yeah, I have so much to learn. I have to get so much better. And I'm like starting this journey of stand up. And I'm just excited. And sometimes I guess I get embarrassed that like, oh, I did sell out Laugh Boston and I did 40 minutes. But and people are like, you're not supposed to do that this time. But it's like, I'm not going to say no to it.
Yet, no, you should be shamed for selling out a club. You should be shamed for selling tickets that were online for people to
buy. Like, I didn't force them to buy the tickets. And
they
the
had
point
consent.
Is,
that's
if,
good.
Yeah, I'm all about consent. And if the show is shit, they won't come back and my career won't do well. So I know I put pressure myself too. I want to be good. I don't want people to just want me on the show because I have followers. But also, the fact that I have followers from a reality TV show, I want to be able to do a small show and fucking bring people to see all these skilled comedians that haven't had the exposure I had to then get discovered. Like, it's a beautiful, like, we're in this ecosystem together. Yeah. And like, when my friend's podcast pops off, I go on it, helps me pop off. And then my podcast is doing well, they come on. Like, it's a beautiful way we're all growing together. And I think comedy doesn't have to be as lonely as it has been in the past sometimes.
When somebody says, you know, you're not supposed to be at Caroline's 250 people your first time, do you look at them and go, you're doing okay? That's how you
foul
play.
Foul play.
Right. You're doing fine.
You guys, I like you guys, you know, because you never know how people are going to react to it. People get like angry. I mean, people get angry.
Yeah, let them.
LOL.
LOL. Hey,
yeah, I mean, we're smart enough.
I was
to
like,
know
aren't
that.
You a comic? Why don't you have a good sense of humor?
Who right. cares?
We know all this is their insecurity, you know.
Yeah. But I also, but now I'm excited to like work on, I have my 40 minutes that now I'm working on getting down to a solid 10 for my like sets during the week, which is like a whole different process and really fun. But also, when I say, oh, I did 40 minutes, whatever. I've had so many people help me along the way. Like, I have Nikki Glaser in my ear giving me notes, Andrew Collin. I have my friend Jesse Jalas. Like, I have so many people that have been helpful and, like, helped me learn. Like, I'm not just going in disrespecting and being like, give me the mic.
We get it. You're humble.
Interesting. I heard no men. Yeah.
No, Andrew Collin. Andrew okay. Collin gave me notes.
Okay. Well, Keith just outed him. So.
Have you guys had him on recently?
Yeah.
He's the best. He's the best.
You can follow Hannah on Twitter and Instagram and see these memes that I'm talking about at Being Burns, BERNZ.
Now, we always ask people at the end, what advice would you give you yourself when you were younger? Not in general, but if you could go back to like 10-year-old you before you started the performance stuff, what would you say?
Specifically you.
I would say, don't care about the scoreboard. Like, the scoreboard is not a thing, as in, like, you winning or you getting this trophy or you getting that. Like, care about
the participation award.
The participation award. But it's, I hate to say this because I don't regret my path, but, like, I wish that I stayed in art. Mm. But I, like, went into tennis because, like, I liked the, like, little, like, victories. I liked the winning and the results. But the journey wasn't happy for me. Mm. And like the journey, results will come if you enjoy the journey. And I think as a kid, just like don't care about the results. Don't care if you lost to Julia Schmeichelstein when you were 12.
Fucking Julia.
Like at the time, that was the end of my life. And it's like, no one gives a shit. Mm. Don't care about the results, which is so hard. But it's about the journey.
But not too long ago, I actually played tennis with Hannah, and she destroyed me, of course. I'm like, don't worry about the scoreboard. Don't worry. No, she
I
remembers.
Thought we're not keeping score.
She knows just fine. It's always, it's been, what, twice? But it's always fun seeing you.
Oh, you guys are the best.
This is great.
Thank you.
Make sure you guys share the show and follow Hannah online. Thank you guys so much. We're Keith and the Girl.
Bye.
And now the closing theme song. What you just heard was my opening line. Please subscribe and tell your friends. Go to myopeningline.com.